Sarah Bellows' book, where the stories write themselves and it all comes alive.
The Jingling Man is coming.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Blinds.com and Calm, the number one app for sleep, meditation, and relaxation. I'm Victor Manis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Just look at our podcast, search for Subbeacon, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
Nothing. We got Flash live in studio for the first time.
Not outside of the studio.
On the other side.
On the premises.
The studio.
Outside studio 2A.
He's reachable if we need to bring him in here.
If
we need some relief.
Some hot talk about whether or not we're in favor of the computerized strike zones or I don't know.
Well, I told him he could use my computer. The filter's off. Okay.
So that's all I've got. Sonny, how are you, sir?
Good. I was in Dallas last week for a couple days at my new place of business. It was very exciting. One thing I wanted to share with the class, we went to, the food was great. Obviously, we got barbecue one day. We had another like caterer second day for lunch. One of the evening excursions was to a country club, and we had very nice food. It was just a really great spread. But there was this one item that I need to describe to you because I've never seen anything quite like it. And this is because I've not been to many county fairs, I guess. But there was a plate of deviled eggs.
Oh, yeah. I love deviled eggs. Why don't you like deviled eggs?
Well, they have mayo. I think you're anti-mayo, okay. Right?
Yeah, they do.
Delicious.
You might have liked these ones. Because there was no mayo in the little topping, but the egg itself had been coated in breading and fried, deep fried.
Yes.
So it was like a crunchy.
It was like a Scotch egg.
It was like a crunchy deviled egg that had been fried, and the dressing on top actually was more mustardy than mayo-y. It was like kind of the.
I don't do mustard either.
You don't do mustard either.
Well, horrifying.
You don't do anything.
You would not have liked this, but it was very. It was very like.
Did
it was.
You like it,
it was just this. It was strange. It was unusual, but I ate like 10 of them. So I obviously didn't.
you were like Cool Hand Luke.
I was like, oh,
a lot of eggs.
What's this fried deviled egg? How
was there alcohol involved, which caused the 10 eggs devouring?
There was alcohol, but I limited myself to two Manhattans and a glass of port.
What shoes did you wear to this? This excursion, you didn't wear old shoes, did you?
I did wear old shoes to that. I didn't get my new shoes till after.
What you got new what? Shoes? What are you talking
tell
about?
Us, give us a shoe update. Oh, come on, what'd you get?
Let me tell you, Allen Edmonds, another great
More.
Clearance sale.
Clearance sale.
Clearance sale. Got some new sneakers.
Wow! Look at those. Yeah. He brought them to
are they
surprised.
Suede?
They're suede.
I didn't.
How much
even...
did they cost?
Like $67.
That is
cheap.
A deal. That's a summer
totally.
Deal.
It's a great deal.
I didn't even notice your shoes, Sonny, because
they were
know.
Like 70% off. It was fantastic.
Question.
Yes.
How do they compare to your classic Sambas? Because I got to say, I feel like Sonny putting on Allen Edwards flat sneakers
Edmonds.
That are made of suede, whatever. Anthony Edwards. It's
Anthony
suede
Daniels.
Sneakers.
C-3PO.
Is a like, oh, Sonny is an old person now. Because in my view, Sonny is the guy who's always wearing the Sambas.
Yeah, well, the Sambas don't really, like, match with, you know, like...
Sambas match with everything.
No, they don't, though, is the thing. They don't. Anyway, I'm over Sambas. Sambas are dead to me.
Sambas are... put away such childish
things. I have a box of brand new Sambas in the back of my closet that I'll break out one of these days.
You mentioned the new shoes, but I didn't even notice it, because how often do you ever look at another man's shoes?
Never.
Shawshank.
Is that a, Shawshank. Oh, I thought you were talking about Larry Craig.
Wide stance. I'm a wide stance guy. Well, good for you, Sonny. I was going to say, to go back really briefly to what you ate, listeners can chime in, but it sounds like it's a riff on a Scotch egg.
What's a Scotch egg?
Well, it's kind of like that. It was like a breading on the outside, and it's, you know,
and it's fried.
Yolky.
Mm-hmm. No, but it wasn't Yoki at all. The inside was not Yoki at all. It was like, I mean, it was like a deviled egg.
So it's a riff.
It was like a deviled egg, except it had been deep fried.
Has the egg been cut in half?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. And then fried. Mm.
Yes.
Okay. Mm.
Well, it had been hard-boiled.
Hard-boiled.
Cut in half. Cut in half.
Turned into deviled.
The topping was made and then it was... I actually don't really know how you make a deviled egg. I just buy them at the store.
You scoop out the egg, the yolk itself. Do you
hard boil it and then like kind of cut around it to peel?
I'm going to say yes. And then you could put your relish or oftentimes paprika. That's the basic way to do it.
So good. All of these things are great.
No, you're not paprika or
honestly,
relish.
Disgusting.
Cheese powder.
I know. It's very sad.
And you can't handle all American condiments like
ketchup, mayo, mustard,
mayo, relish.
You could just cut all
miracle
American
whip.
When
that.
You eat a hot dog, what is it? Just plain?
Of course.
Have you ever eaten a hot dog?
Yeah, I'll eat hot dogs.
I mean, it's like full of murder mystery meat.
Yeah, but see, now that I'm keto, believe me, I feel bad
are you
about
eating. You're keto
whoa!
Now?
Not keto.
What?
It's not
what?
Keto.
But
this
what?
Is the no, this is the,
so you're
the no
just
carb
eating
thing.
You're just eating the dog, not even the bun.
Yeah.
Just taking that in there.
Just a banger in the mouth. Okay. That's how I... Right. I grilled myself up two fantastic Kirkland brand bratwursts for breakfast this morning, since it's just me and Flash and there are no rules and we can do whatever we want. I grilled them up. It was so good for breakfast.
You know what's really good on it? Mustard.
Ugh. Absolutely.
Thank you, Sonny.
You guys disgust me.
Mustard, ketchup.
The entire German nation.
Horrifying.
That's how they eat
all
it.
Of those things. I don't even like having them in my refrigerator.
Bizarre.
Did you put cheese powder on the sausages?
Wow, I did not. But they're not sausages. These are bratwursts. Yes.
Well,
they're like enormous
bratwursts. A brat is just a sausage. It's a kind of sausage.
It's a kind of
okay.
It's a very distinct flavor.
Do you put the cheese powder on your... Do you make scrambled eggs?
No. I like scrambled eggs. I just don't make them.
Mm. Oh, I'm thinking like scrambled eggs with the cheese powder.
Bet it would be pretty good.
That would be decadent.
I bet it would be pretty good.
Decadent.
So... Anyway.
All right, good chat.
Victorino, how are you?
I'm fine. Happy,
yeah?
Happy Assumption Day, JVL.
I went to Vigil Mass last night.
Oh,
how about
so
you?
Did I. Yeah. Very good for our clerical
listeners. Sonny, when did you go?
To.
So let me say this.
Sonny, the Assumption, Feast of the Assumption is about, would you just give me the figure, the person
yeah,
it's
yeah.
about. Go.
He assumes it's about.
Multiple
Daniel.
Choice.
Daniel.
Moab.
So on Sunday, right, we're at church and at St. Thomas More Cathedral, the 5 p.m., which is the last chance mass, right? That's it, 5 p.m. Sunday night. So go there and they come to the like the opening hymn, right? And they say, please turn to whatever. And the song is called A Living Faith. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Do you know what this is? So I said, I never heard this song
this isn't
before.
Even a, this isn't even a gather hymn.
No.
This
oh,
is like
no,
a
no,
St.
No, right,
Michael hymn.
Right. So then I go, I said, what is this one? And then the melody starts, and it's Faith of Our Fathers. But the name of the song is now A Living Faith. So I said, that's weird. Sonny's going crazy.
It's like a living
here.
Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Very good. Touché.
How's that for deep pull?
Excellent. They have a lot in common here. So the opening verse.
Sonny's going to pass out.
Yeah, he is.
He's actually going to black out.
The opening verse is actually Faith of Our Fathers, right? Mm-hmm. Fire, dungeon, sword, the whole thing. The second verse is a new one. Faith of Our Mothers.
Oh, that's so good.
And then the third verse, Faith of Our Sisters. And brothers too. What happened? What is happening here? Everybody's
like
losing
the
their
Quakers
minds.
Got hold of Catholicism.
No, it's bizarre. And I just like at which point Kate actually stopped and she literally said, she goes, excuse me. She just said, excuse me. And you know what? It's like, you know, it was
your
so,
father-in-law. His head would have exploded.
Yeah, no,
scanner style.
No, that's it. No, scanner style. That's right.
Like, this is you know, this all harkens back to
what is happening.
I remember in
Faith of Our Mothers
at my Quaker school, the only like quasi religious hymn we were allowed to do was the Walk in the Light, the George Fox song. And there was like a big to do among the teachers. I forget which grade I was in about because there's a, you know, brothers all are we.
Yes, brother.
There
yeah,
was
yeah,
a
yeah.
big thing.
Oh,
I remember
is,
the year they
earth.
Changed
let,
it.
Let there be peace
to
on earth.
Brothers and sisters are we. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah.
It'll change again. yeah. Sorry, Sonny. What I would just say, I would at which point I would much rather sing a Protestant song than Living Faith. I would sing Bulwark. Speaking of Bulwark, Mighty Fortress, rather, and Rock of Ages. Speaking of rocks, over the weekend, Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
A plus. No, it did not.
Remained at the top of the box office with $25 million.
It dropped 58%.
51%, I believe, as of last night.
They get to brag that they were...
It dropped 58%.
They get to brag that they were at the top of the box office for 2 weeks in a row. Followed by Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark with $21 million. And in third place, The Lion King with $20 million. And in fourth place, Dora and the Lost City of Gold with $17 million. Can you say increíble?
Increíble.
Muy bien. Do you ever have to watch that?
No, I've never actually watched it.
They pause.
Right. Well, I said it, though, but that's the joke, right? I said it, and then...
You said it. You, as the viewer, you said it. Of course, we're not watching... none of us watched Dora. We all watched Scary Stories in the Dark, right, everybody?
Yeah, I watched that.
Me too.
What time is it, Vic?
It's not 9:27.
Go f*** yourself. You guys didn't see Dora?
Dude, I know we...
We agreed we were going to see Dora.
I know we
did it on air.
We fist bumped. We even fist bumped saying, you said, I got your back, but that was a joke. I'm not actually going to see that
You didn't
movie.
Actually go see it, did you?
100%.
I mean, I kind of assumed you wouldn't go see Scary Stories because, you know, you're afraid of ketchup.
You're sick.
You're so you guys didn't go see Dora?
No. No. Who in the right mind? What grown man? What 40-something-year-old man?
You know, all the jokes. All the jokes about the trench coats and the, you know.
My jokes? I'm kidding.
Gene going to jail.
Well, look, you know, maybe I should have realized that the terms of your restraining order and or parole would have forbid you from going within 50 meters of a Dora screening.
I can't believe you saw it. So maybe... Well, you can tell us.
Maybe I'll just do my own damn big boy review.
Well, why don't you,
Dora the Explorer?
Please do.
Let's go for it.
Dora the Explorer is the updated live-action version of the beloved Nickelodeon cartoon. It fixes a lot of things that were wrong with the original, namely by giving Dora boobs. I don't know what else to say. Okay, so you guys didn't see it. It actually did reasonably well at the box office. $17 million. It is a very low budget movie.
It's a $50 million movie.
A- cinnamon score. It passed the cinnamon challenge.
Sweet.
The general plot is that Dora goes to high school in Los Angeles with her cousin Diego. Her parents, who are played by Michael Pena and Eva Longoria, are archaeology professors. They are searching for the lost city of something something.
Zinj. The lost city of Zinj.
Parapata.
Are there monkeys in this movie?
There is, in fact, a monkey.
Is there a head-crushing monkey with, like, stone paddles?
No.
So it's not a Congo.
There's an animated monkey that looks kind of like Sonic from the Sonic the Hedgehog.
So it looks real. What you're saying is it looks realistic.
Wait, so it looks like Sonic from the movie or Sonic from the video game?
Sonic from the movie.
Oh, so scary. With, like, teeth.
So Dora... Honestly, I think might become something of a cult classic because, so first of all, the demographics of it the first weekend were very interesting. 54% of moviegoers were over the age of 25, mm-hmm. which is weird. It is more of a nostalgia play than a kid's play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of insane. So there are, you don't have to bleep that. I can't believe this.
Go
ahead. So there are... Things that so first of all they conceive of the character of Dora as like a this you will have to bleep like a slightly Indiana Jones, like she is a weird, she's at least on the spectrum and maybe is actually kind of touched. She talks to the camera and breaks the fourth wall, and when she does that, everybody else just kind of looks at each other like, what is she doing? So like when Dora's
okay,
like,
yeah,
can you say delicioso? Her parents look at each other like, oh, God, she's doing it again.
I was thinking that it might be a riff on, remember Brady Bunch the movie?
When, yes.
Which actually worked in the sort of tongue-in-cheek way with Shelley Long. And,
yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like, and Gary Cole.
This kind of works in many ways. Not all the ways.
Because if you did it like that, it would work.
So there's some of that going on. There is some of Dora, like, so for instance, Dora can talk to her monkey and can understand her monkey.
Like in Congo.
And... and everybody else thinks she's insane. So this is not one of those things where in the cartoons, it's just like, oh, blah, 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 Boots talks and Dora's we delicio or whatever, and everybody just sort of goes along with it. In this, everybody thinks she's insane. And you in the audience aren't quite sure whether or not she's sane or insane either until one scene where the monkey starts speaking in English to her instead of in monkey gibberish, and he is voiced by Danny Trejo, and Dora all of a sudden is taken aback by him talking in English and has a conversation with him, at which point you start to think to yourself that actually perhaps Dora has been making it up all along when she says she was talking with the monkey. Do you see what I'm saying? We are being hinted at that, in fact, Dora might be kind of crazy. And I thought that was kind of interesting.
You're now making me want to see this movie.
There's a moment in the middle of it where she touches she and Diego are like have some sort of poppy dust breathed on them and sends them into a hallucinogenic stupor. And the hallucinogenic trip is described by having them slowly turn into animated characters. And then for like 60 or 90 seconds, everything is done in Dora animation style.
Okay.
And it's weird and funny and trippy, and it actually kind of works. I don't know. I mean,
wow.
Is it a good thing that Dora is now sexualized by being played by 18-year-old Isabella Moner in like short shorts and a super tight shirt?
Who is very attractive. Just on the red carpet and stuff. Not fair.
Is that bad? I don't know. But I will say this.
Caliente.
Like, Isabella Moner's performance is so totally committed that it's kind of weirdly endearing. It's a crazy, weird movie. And Isabella Moner just goes two fists in. It's just okay, let's do this.
Do Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado. I can't remember.
Yes.
She was like
the little girl,
the rich girl who gets kidnapped by everyone. Yeah. And she was really good in that too. Uh-huh.
She is not doing any winking to the audience. She has just decided to take the insane vision. It reminds me of like one of those crazy, do you remember, like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago when Nick Cage was doing all sorts of like the Port of New Orleans nutso?
He's still doing all of those. He's still doing movies.
Is essentially, imagine an 18-year-old girl who just decides, hey, I want to try doing something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then just goes for it for all hour 47. Like I said, I think this is destined to be a cult classic for people who grew up liking Dora, and then it becomes like a stoner movie for them, or a TNT movie for them, or something.
Hmm. Wow. What was the audience like?
The audience was, I mean, all the other guys loved it. No, no, it was almost, well, so this is weird. I went to a morning screening of it, and so it was all families with little kids, and they all loved it.
Dora is still on, right? People are still watching Dora. Kids are still watching Dora.
I mean, everything is still on now because everything is streaming.
Everything will be on forever.
Forever.
Right.
Okay.
So nothing goes away. But it killed. Again, I think 17 million. If you had looked at this before the weekend, you would have thought, this kind of looks like a train wreck. And it seems to have played pretty well.
My only observation is I saw a picture of her on the red carpet, as Sonny mentioned. I saw a picture of her actually in the Dora outfit, like a real picture, not like, you know, and she's 18, so she has boobs. And then in the poster, she doesn't. So I think they CGI'd them down.
Maybe.
According to my analysis.
According to your in-depth analysis of the pictures.
This is like when Vic did the Alita thing. It was like, you know, that second body they put Alita in, I'm not sure if I like it.
She was 30, man. Okay, I'm just telling you. It was wrong with it. She was 30.
In terms of box office, this was a disappointing figure, 17 million. It is below expectation.
But was it though? Wasn't it looking like a disaster?
I mean,
and it only became a disappointment.
$17 million is kind of a disaster. Yeah. It's not. The movie probably cost, what, $50, $60, $70 million to market? It's $120 million.
Did they market this anywhere?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is a worse disaster in that sense, Dora or The Kitchen?
Well, The Kitchen's a much bigger disaster. I would say. I mean, the kitchen grossed $5.5 million on a $40 million budget, right. And that is
most
not,
of that went to Melissa McCarthy.
No, that is not going to you know
to craft
I don't
services.
Think a good.
I have a question
cheap,
though.
That was cheap.
What? I kid because I love. Was the kitchen? I was not clear as to why the kitchen was being released in August or late July, whatever
well,
the actual
it's
release
being,
was.
It's being dumped in August.
Yes,
because
that's what they wanted.
They
didn't that look like a prestige movie? I mean, why is that not an October release?
I have no idea what this movie is. I literally, the first I heard of it was this weekend.
It's a graphic novel, right?
Is it?
I believe so.
Is it? I have no.
Yeah, I've been seeing trailers for this for months.
I had no awareness of this movie.
Me too.
Really?
Whatsoever.
I've
like,
seen
total,
several trailers.
I haven't seen
in the
any
theater.
Ads for it. I didn't see any trailers in any of the movies I went
see
to go
it
see.
On TV.
I didn't. I like literally this weekend when people started talking, like, "Oh, the kitchen is a disaster." I was like, "Wait, what's the kitchen?" And this is a movie that stars Melissa McCarthy, who like 2 years ago everyone was saying is like the biggest star in Hollywood, and like
plus. Elizabeth Moss and Tiffany Haddish.
Elizabeth Moss, who
well,
has never opened a
Tiffany
movie.
Tiffany Haddish.
And Tiffany Haddish, who...
Bias, because you hate Tiffany Haddish.
I do. She annoys me. She, like... She,
as an actress, not as a person.
I don't know her as a person, right. But, like, as an, her shtick annoys me. I find her... I find
Elizabeth
her,
Moss,
but,
she's a huge star. But, she was in Mad Men and The West Wing. And
but
the Handmaid's Tale.
But yeah, Melissa McCarthy. Melissa McCarthy, since... Spy, which came out in 2015, is pretty good. I liked it. Her movies have grossed $63 million. That's The Boss. That's where she's like the meat. She's like
right.
the okay. Martha Stewart type, mm-hmm. right? Then Ghostbusters, which was, as we all know, an epical disaster. Life of the Party, which again, it was like she goes back to college. Remember that? Mm. Remember that when she goes back to college with her kid. That grossed $53 million, which is like
that sounds like Back to School.
Exactly, that's what it's like. Gender swap Back to School grossed $65 million worldwide, right? So I don't know what it cost, but it probably wasn't that expensive. But it still probably didn't make its money back after ads and all that. And then the Happy Time Murders, the puppet, the terrible R-rated puppet movie. Yeah, I saw that. Literally one of the worst movies I've ever seen in a theater.
Wow.
And Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is actually really good, but it's an art house picture. It's an Oscar picture. And it only grossed $8 million. This is gross $7 million. It probably won't
she was
gross
nominated
20.
For that. I think
if
she's
a movie star, it's a good movie.
If she's a legit movie star, then she has the worst product choice of any star in recent memory. Yeah. I mean, the movies she's choosing to do.
Well, I mean, look. Let's be honest. Let's be fair to her. From 2011, right, to about 2015, she's in Bridesmaids, huge hit. Identity Thief, shockingly huge hit. That movie grossed $134 million. That movie with her and Jason Bateman. She was in The Hangover Part 3. And then The Heat with Sandra Bullock. Another like big, big hit.
Buddy Cop.
And then Spy, which was her and Jason Statham. It's my there was a moment where it seemed like, okay, she is actually like a legit movie star. And then like the last 4 years, it's just been nothing but disasters.
Yeah. On the other hand, Scary Stories did probably
overperformed.
It didn't cost much, and horror does very well.
Yeah. Can't believe you guys didn't see Dora. Did you go? So you went to see Scary Stories instead of Dora?
Yeah. I like Scary Stories.
Anyone else see Scary Stories at least?
No.
You're not even going to give me that.
No, I'm not going to give
you
that.
Not only do
nothing.
I not get my
no
gene
core,
review
nothing.
Of
you
Dora.
Got nothing. You got nothing.
You know what? I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to come up with a gene review of Dora while you guys talk about your
good
scary
luck.
Movie.
I just want to make it. If anyone hears about it, it's Jonathan. Okay.
I'm just going to beep the whole
thank
Dora
you. That's
review.
Good. It'll just be gone. Sonny, how about a big boy review of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark? Explain to people what this is.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is based on a series of books that if you are of a certain age, I think, basically my age and maybe like 5 years in either direction.
So old man Mattis would not have.
So you guys are a little bit too old. I don't know if kids still go to libraries these days. I don't know if
we
the libraries.
We take our kids, but I think that's a weird thing.
School
I don't think
libraries
people do.
Are a thing. Anymore, but when I was in school, when I was in middle school, middle school and like elementary school, maybe there was a series of books called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark that were always checked out, and it was like whoever had them in the school was like an object of like you know jealousy. Like people were like, oh, he's got scary stories and stuff. And it was, it's just like an anthology of like scary stories, campfire type stories, you know, like.
Is it H.P. Lovecraft type or what is
no,
it?
No, like? it's not really H.P. Lovecraft. It's more like campfire stories. It's like,
oh, okay.
It's like, and the scraping on top of the car was his hook hand. Bah, you know.
Question,
like,
question. Yes. Is one book a compilation or is each
they're
one a little story?
They're all I think they're all anthologies. There's like three
got
or four
it,
of these
got
books.
It. Okay, okay.
And they had these terrifying illustrations in them, like Bernie Wrightson style, kind of like melty faces and Bernie Wrightson.
Oh, that would sell me on it, the pictures.
Am I getting the artist right here, the painter?
I don't know.
Okay. It is not Bernie. Right,
we had a pact.
But no, we didn't have any pact. You are just a... Anyway, mm-hmm. You made a bad choice.
Yeah.
JBL, you made a poor choice. Yeah. So anyway, this movie is based on those books, and it is a very weird anthology in that a friend of mine described it this way on Letterboxd, the movie reviewing social media
yes.
site, that it is like one of those anthology. It's like an anthology film, right? But like the stuff where that connects the stories, like the crypt keeper telling a story, or like the you know, whatever, the like the old man who gets you except it's like 85% that connective material. And only 15% of the actual scary stories, right? Like the actual like anthologized stories are like a very small part of it. It's about trying to build an actual film that uses this book as the spine of the story, so to speak, which is an interesting choice. It's a choice. It's a choice you can make. And what the director and the producer, who is Guillermo del Toro, he's the producer. I can't remember the name of the director. Some foreigner.
Ryan Johnson.
Not Ryan Johnson.
Nosferatu.
Hold on, I'm actually going to look it up because
that's your joke. You're supposed to say Guillermo del Toro.
Oh right.
Nosferatu. Right. This is your bit. He's putting it down there, and you're supposed to pick it up.
Sorry, I'm
Come on. Come on, guy.
I'm still trying to figure out the transition for your ad. Go ahead. I have a question, Sonny, while you're looking this up.
Yeah.
Are all these stories...
Andre Ovredal. I'm not 100% sure how to pronounce his first name because it has this weird O.
Yes, it's Ondaatje. It's Ondaatje.
Anyway, so it's not Ondaatje. The movie is this kind of... It's trying to find a structure for these stories, right? And the movie is all about the structure. And what they have done is they have made a series of explicitly political choices. Here's what I was not expecting to go into in this movie. And I was kind of surprised when I saw that it was 81% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. The movie is for some reason set in 1968. I don't know if that's when the books originally came out or what, but it's set in 1968 on the eve of the election of Richard Nixon. And the one bully jerk kid in town is like signing up to go to Vietnam. He's not even getting drafted. He's like going in and he's like, hey, I'm going to Vietnam. I'm going to kill some, you know, Asians.
Oh, careful.
Some Asian Americans. I'm going to go kill them.
Yes, that's what they called me when I was a kid. Yes, go ahead.
And the villains, spoilers, you know, the overall villains of the story, it's this family who locked away their daughter in a basement because she's different, but also because she was trying to tell the town that the family's mill is poisoning all the children. Mm-hmm. Okay. So like there's this explicitly political, not even subtext, just text, like Nixon is on every TV in the background of like every scene. And all about how terrible he is, and then you have the subtext of the, you know, big business is evil and racism is bad. There's a
racist cop,
a racist cop, and the racist kids, and a Mexican American character comes into town, and he is called Wetback, and it's all very jarring and trying. But it has this explicitly political backdrop to it, right? Is what I'm getting at here. Leftist, like not even really liberal leftist. So the conclusion of the film then involves the girl who is like the hero of the story, who
she's
is like,
no hero.
She's figured out the mystery of why these stories are appearing in this book and blah, blah. And she goes to the evil, like witch ghost character who's making all of these things happen and says, I know that you're not evil, but you're acting evil now, and your actions are having impact on my friends who are good. They're liberal, you know. My friends didn't vote for Nixon. The one guy is like into organic food or whatever, right?
He was health food minded, and
you're doing wrong. I'll tell the truth. I'll tell everybody. The truth will set you free, right? And then the ghost is like, okay, I'll stop, and stops. And then at the end of the film, there's this Mexican American character who like rolls into town and is treated racistly, blah blah. And the cop's like, I found out about you. You're a draft dodger. And the guy's like, yeah, I didn't want to go to the war because my brother went and he came back in a body bag,
in pieces.
So I couldn't do it. And then at the end of the film, the happy ending is him going to Vietnam. He like gets on the bus to go to the army base to get inducted and to go to Vietnam. She's like, I'll write you every day. And she hands him the first letter.
Because he served, unlike other people,
Sonny.
But it's
really interesting here because like I actually wish you had seen the movie, JBL, because there is this stridently leftist critique of American society from top to bottom. And then it culminates in this kind of like wishy-washy neoliberal, like trust the system. Send him off to war. Like, this guy's not a conscientious objector, right? This is what we learn at the end of the film. It's not like he's like running off to Canada because he abhors what, you know, evil America is doing to the world. He's literally just a coward. And now he's not a coward anymore. He's going to go off to war and he's going to get the love of this girl. And it is a fascinating mishmash. And the only reason I'm spending so much time on this, because usually I just gloss over the politics of these things, is because they very clearly want us to think about the evils of American society. Mm-hmm. And then like, just glossing over all of that at the end with this kind of wishy-washy neoliberal thing is in a weird way kind of a perfect metaphor for where the left spectrum
is. Government is just what we call the things we do together.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is...
It would have been interesting to get JVL to see this movie. On the other hand, it would have been hard to keep you calm. Speaking of which,
calm.com, our friends. I got an email from I won't say her name on air, but a good friend of the show who said that she was traveling and finally just bit the bullet and went and subscribed to Calm. And she said it was fantastic. Put her to sleep right away. I was Calm.com, our my favorite sponsor, not our favorite. Institutionally, we love all of our sponsors. CALM.com is a app for your phone, which has all sorts of guided meditations and breathing exercises and also my favorite things, sleep stories. And you go to Calm and you give this giant library of sleep stories to choose from, amazing readers, and you put them on and they just knock you out. It's like taking Benadryl or Lunesta or Ambien.
Stay away from that butterfly.
But all of these things, but it just works. It's so great. And I wanted to share something with you guys that I found on Calm.com. In fact, last night, as I was just noodling around trying to choose what I was going to have put me to sleep, and I found something that I had never seen before.
Oh, boy.
Hello, I'm Bob Ross, and I'd like to welcome you to the 29th Joy of Painting series.
And so they have a Calm-produced Bob Roth episode. And you know what? I find that listening to Bob Ross to put you to sleep is even better than watching it. And it works so great. And this is, again, it's just the genius of Calm.com. They have people reading, you know, informative stories about like Yellowstone National Park, and then people reading fairy tales for kids. It's the greatest. And you should all go and get it, especially if you have kids, because, man, this stuff works on kids. Right now, Subbeacon listeners will get 25% off of a Calm premium subscription by going to calm.com/subbeacon. That's calm.com/subbeacon. 40 million people have downloaded Calm, 20 million of them probably Subbeacon listeners. find out why at calm.com/subbeacon.
Thank you, JVL.
Bob Ross.
I love Bob
Ross. Isn't
that
genius?
Yes. It reminds me of like Sunday afternoons. My dad would have it on TV and he would just watch.
Did your dad ever paint along with
He still paints now. And so now that he's been retired, he's been painting like a fiend and some pretty good stuff. Still, he's getting into still life and sort of landscapes and things like that. And one of them now hangs in our... In our living room.
Does one dog go one way and one dog go the other?
Very good, Sonny. And the other guy's like, hey, what do you want? What are you looking for me? He's got a nice head of hair. You know, looks like somebody we know. Okay, very nice.
Vic, did you like Scary Stories? Can I just say also, like, following that long political riff slash rant. There were things I liked a lot about this movie, including the fact that it is like it's pushing the boundaries of that PG-13 rating. It is scary. It's scary. It's dark and scary, and it has this weird under.
I would sooner eat mayonnaise than go see this thing.
It has a real undercurrent of body horror, like, you know, losing control of yourself, like, you know, just metaphor for puberty, whatever. Like, but
Vic is like, oh,
I need to see this again. Okay,
but I thought the like scary part of it more or less worked. I thought it was pretty.
That's
pretty,
what I was going to say.
Impressive.
So the 13-year-old me would have given this an A-. So an A-. Okay. You know, because then you would be so the young person would be rather kind of oblivious to those political undertones or tones, as you would overtones.
Yeah, just text.
You'd be like, yeah,
it's not
like,
even subtext.
Okay, yeah, whatever. He's on TV. All right, tricky dick, whatever. But you know, and there were moments. I will admit this. There was a moment where the other kid, the health, the diet conscious kid, is under the bed, and I took my glasses off.
You didn't want to see it.
I kept
You're
it blurry.
Scared.
I don't know. I'm rarely like that.
Oh,
and
look
I
at
was
that.
But the bed thing is always, you know, and it's all but it, and it's so predictable because it's always, oh, it didn't happen. Wait, now it happens.
Yeah.
You know, and they should do one where it happens so immediately.
Versus, yeah, where it's like double bluff. The first place he looks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Double bluff.
Exactly. Rather than
because it's not the first place, and then it's not the second place. And like,
right, no.
Instead, no, it should just be the first one, like, look up.
The weird thing is, the monsters themselves, I don't know, were they that scary? I don't know. You know, the idea of it's scary, but were they visually that scary? The scarecrow or the thing under the bed. I don't know what, you know, but okay. So here's my thought. So I did like it. I gave it, again, the 13-year-old me gives it the A-. I basically said everything that you said that I said here. It's a bit derivative. It reminded me, it's kind of like it, obviously. The spider bite, which some people will be disturbed by, I'd seen that before and much more terrifying in a movie called The Believers. Have you ever seen The Believers? With Martin Sheen. And he and his daughter have to. The mother dies. She gets electrocuted by a faulty coffee machine. So I remember that because you watch the electrocution by accident in the kitchen. This was a Mattis Family special, by the way, growing up. And then they go to this place, and then they stumble upon Santeria, and so it's sort of voodoo-ish. And then Martin Sheen's friend has a spider bite, but. It was scarier because there was no CGI. So in this one, it's like a million spiders coming out. It was kind of crazy at the end. Like one, two, three, a dozen. That's scary. But the million in Scary Stories.
Too much.
It was too much. So in The Believers, I mean, there's no CGI. I don't know what they did to that poor actress. But, you know, it's all coming out there. And it's like, you know, 20 spiders. Gross. Okay. So that I thought. You
too
know,
many spiders.
Seen it before. Eh.
Vic Mattis. Too many spiders. A-.
Without the spiders.
Hey, yeah. Mm-hmm. They overdid it. The one thing that stood out for me, of course, was when Ramon says they put her away because she was different.
Yeah, you know, she's
because
different.
She had the albino disorder.
We don't actually see her, right? We see, like, we catch, like, a glimpse of her in the mirror, kind of.
Yes, that's right.
And then
that's
we see,
right.
like, the ghost,
the ghost
version.
Her, the ghost
yeah.
her. Yeah, and again, the racist cop, Gil Bellows, Billy from Ally McBeal.
Yeah,
was, there's no way he's racist.
It's like
I'm going to tell you
the
right
guy
now.
From Ally McBeal slash
that.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice guy, refused to believe that, okay? So, but it's weird, and I think it's very effective because... I mentioned to my kids, I'm going to see Scary Stories. They are terrified of it the way they're terrified of it. There's something about it that it's okay. Oh, they want to see, my son will see Alien or Aliens. That's fine. But Scary Stories telling dark, absolutely
not. Well, but it's
not.
Because it's aimed at kids. I mean, like,
you would have taken your kids to this?
No, I mean, well, it was PG-13.
PG-13. Well, no, but I mean, like,
but I did. They didn't want to go, so I said something's working in the marketing.
Let's drill down on that for 1 second because I do think it's interesting. Because, like, you know, your kids will go see the Alien movie, right? The scary external threat, but like. It or this movie, these are movies about kids set in high school. Like, that is what is, that is one of the reasons why those books were always so terrifying, is because it was like, you know, the 15-year-old jock who beats up the scarecrow and then turns into a scarecrow. Like, okay, that's weird and scary.
But you also kind of are like, you end up rooting for the scarecrow because you're not supposed to kid.
Well, right? So this is another problem with, like, how the movie works, right? Is that, like, on the one hand, the ghost villain is doing bad things to bad people, right? The racist cop, the racist jock. But then it's also doing bad things to good people. It's doing bad things to the health conscious friend and the kid who, like, I don't know, gets absorbed by.
I can't explain that one. What happens there? Was that, and that was not scary. That was weird.
It was just
weird. Absorbed.
Kind of trippy.
Yeah, it was kind of. It was
absorbed
very,
into what?
This giant.
This kid's running through a
ghost lady.
This kid's running through a mental hospital, and he gets to, like, basically a place where two hallways intersect, and so he goes one way, and this, like, big fat ghost lady is, like, in front of him, and he turns around and starts running the other way, and she's right there. And then he goes a different way, and she's right there. So, like, every way he goes, she's there, and every time he turns around, it gets closer
and closer. So I can see that.
So it has like a nightmare logic to it that is compelling on a visceral level. Intellectually, I have no idea what's going on.
Wait, so are you rooting for the bad guys to get theirs from the scary monsters?
This is kind of a problem with the movie, right? Is that, like, the villain is right.
Right.
About her awful family and poisoning the town.
So it's one thing for her to be angry.
She's taking her revenge. So this is
her problem is only that she's going after the Democrats too.
Right. No. This is it. This is it. Yes. Like, this is, like,
don't you understand? We're your allies.
It'd be like if the DSA went and blew up a college campus. People would be like, no, do that at the ICE station.
Right. That's right. Again, it was just that particular sequence is weird because it's like, for me, getting absorbed by a giant mannequin is not the most scariest thing I can think of. So, just my thought.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
You guys both kind of liked it?
Yeah.
Yeah, aspects of it. I mean, yeah, it was entertaining. There were parts of it that were entertaining, but I will tell you this, again, the older me, no sympathy for Stella, the girl. Right? She brought it on her friend. She took the book out.
Yeah. So we skipped over talking a bunch of the plot, but, like, everything gets kicked into motion when these kids, like, break into a haunted house, go down into the hidden room, and then start stealing stuff from the ghost. So, like, they kind of had it coming.
She's responsible for their deaths. She kind of also reminded me of Thora Birch, didn't she? Like, from American Beauty a little bit. And I was unclear how old she was. I mean, she's having this weird flirty relationship with Ramon, but I don't know how old she is. Are they
Who's
in high school?
Boy.
I'm just saying.
Always comes back here, doesn't
it? No.
I think she's a senior, right? She's a senior in high school.
Oh, okay then. That's fine.
The cinema score for this movie, you saw, did you not?
Yeah.
C.
Oh, that's
ooh.
Horror.
That interests me.
That's very interesting.
Horror,
not good.
Always, like, one of the weird things about cinema score is that horror movies always grade lower, right? So if your baseline for, like, an acceptably good movie is essentially a B+, right? I would say for a horror movie, it's closer to a C+. There's a weird curve there. And sometimes that's not... I think that if the first It was an A, whatever. But, like, horror movies in particular get judged more harshly by the audiences who go to see horror movies, and they keep showing up for all the horror movies. There's a very weird psychological thing going on here.
But. So, if I can just branch out from this for a moment here. Movies that I thought as a kid were far more scarier, that are similar to Scary Stories in the Dark, but I thought were far more scarier. And I think they hold up.
Far more scarier.
Far more scarier.
And he's the editor.
Erist. Creepshow.
It's like listening to my 4-year-old though.
We can have a nice conversation. Creepshow. You ever see Creepshow?
I did not see Creepshow.
See,
I know.
So the effects, there's no CGI, right? There's no CGI. It's disturbing. But Creepshow, I thought it was genuinely scary. I'd like to see it now. Yeah. I'm sure you can
Does
go
Creepshow
into
have
YouTube.
One of these iconic characters?
It's a series of Tales from the Crypt. But the Creepshow was based on the comic book.
Was Creepshow the one with like the little leprechaun thing in the, with Drew Barrymore?
I think no. that's Leprechauns.
That one is called Cat's Eye.
Cat's Eye, yeah.
And that was
another anthology horror.
Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah.
Creepshow was directed by George Romero.
Yeah.
And I think written by Stephen King. So some of it were like The Crate with Adrian Barbeau is in that. Absolutely frightening. Leslie Nielsen is in one, and he's not funny. And it's, you know, one where you're drowning by death, death by drowning. I mean, so it's some really scary things. I would recommend you want to get scared. Maybe it's not going to. I mean, check out Creepshow. I thought that was far scarier. Twilight Zone, the movie. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was scary too. In most ways, I mean, there was one that was kind of silly where the old people where Vic Morrow
got his head cut off.
The helicopter one, it was disturbing. Okay, but I thought that was scarier.
It was disturbing in real life.
It was because they changed the ending. Yeah. He was supposed to.
Yeah, that's why it was disturbing. Because
movie,
you know about this, right, JBL?
Yeah, no, terrible. And the kids died too. It was terrible.
Tell me more.
Yeah,
John Landis directed the segment that was like the guy who goes back to Vietnam, right?
Yep.
So there's a segment, one of these segments, he's a racist, he goes to Nazi Germany, the South. He's like a black person getting chased by the Klan. He's a Jew in Nazi Germany, mm-hmm. whatever. And he's a, I guess he's Vietnamese in Vietnam.
Right.
Vietnam. John Landis broke the rules. I don't know what this is all very tricky, but the end result was there was a helicopter crash on set, and Vic Morrow was killed
along with two Vietnamese kids. Yeah,
who and like just
so
like
so there was a
extras,
violation
basically.
Of child labor laws.
There was a trial. You know,
and I'm pretty sure that was the end of John Landis. That brought him, right. That was the end of him. Sunny. It was that movie. People, yeah. All of a sudden, nobody wanted to work with or deal with John Landis anymore because of that. So
yeah.
That was very weird. I would say that was scary. But John Lithgow, there's the other sketch in that is it 30,000 feet, a terror at 30,000 feet?
Yes. Gremlins.
Yeah. Very good. The opening with Dan Aykroyd and Albert Brooks. It just jumps at you. I saw this when I was, I guess, 10. I don't know. But I'd like to add to this series for our listeners, Tales from the Crypt. I think you can watch the entire episode called Carrion Death, which stars Kyle MacLachlan. And I think he directed it, too, where he's an escaped convict, but he's still handcuffed to the cop that he killed, and he has to drag him around the desert. Amazing ending. Just leave it. JVL, you should watch it. You'd love it.
What's the ending?
Well, you know, he realizes that, you know, he finally finds a sharp object that he can find to sever the cop's hand so he can be free of the cop and then be on his way. But he's already dehydrated and everything in the desert for several days. But by the time he gets to this, hatches this plan, he's so dizzy that he misses. And then when he lifts up, he turns out he severed his own hand. Instead of the cops.
Spoilers.
And then he falls down a cliff and he breaks his back. So he's paralyzed from the neck down, at which point the vultures that have been following him the entire episode then land on his chest. And he says, no. And then they pick his eye out and they show the eye being plucked out. You should watch it, JVL. You'd love it.
That sounds great. Yeah, I'm going to get right on that.
Should eat a mayo sandwich.
Do you have any other scary story thoughts?
Wait, where are you on the like the Elvira stuff? Do you remember?
I know, it was sticky. It was fine.
I feel like there was Elvira, which was the national brand, and then there was the Philadelphia brand. Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
With, oh gosh,
a different Elvira.
There was a Philly version of Elvira. And her name was the Stella, maybe,
like on
the
channel 29 or 17.
Yes, but she was the man eater from Maniunk, who was the I don't know. You guys keep talking, and I will find her name. But you don't remember this? You didn't get this in the
no.
Oh man,
the killer from
so
the Schuylkill, the Schuylkiller. No, Sonny, do you have any other thoughts on this? No, that's it. We're ready to move on. Okay, Sonny, JVL, I got to move on.
Shore World. That's right. Stella. I was right. Stella, the man-eater from Maniac.
People were yelling.
And this was, yes, this is absolutely, Saturday Night Dead was the name of the
series. Oh, it's like Saturday Night Live.
Right, get it? And but it was a locally produced TV series.
And it was all horror genre?
All horror movies.
Horror comedy?
Horror movies and like clips that clearly the local CBS station or whatever it was had purchased the rights to and then strung together with, in between, Stella, who was, again, the Philly version of Elvira. If I showed you a picture of it, it's exactly what you think.
Okay.
It's exactly Great. What Love you it. Think if okay. I say Philly Elvira. Big hair.
I mean, it's just Elvira.
No, no, no. Elvira's much classier.
Okay. Very good. I'd also say Fright Night. That's a scary one from the 80s. Love it. So he looks like, okay, all we're right. done. You know what
You're
else?
You're just listing things
I
now.
I am, but that's, right. that's, isn't that what we do on the show? No? Okay.
Now we rank things. That's different.
Rank things. That's right. I'll tell you what else is scary, having broken blinds on your windows. For many of us, your blinds or whatever you have on your windows is an afterthought, but with brand new made-to-order custom window coverings from Blinds.com, you can really transform the look and feel of your entire home. With 15 million windows covered and over 30,000 five-star customer reviews, Blinds.com is America's number one online retailer for affordable quality custom window coverings. Whether you're looking for energy efficiency, you just moved, or want to refresh the look of your home, Blinds.com makes the whole experience so fast and easy. Plus, every order gets free samples, free shipping, a free online design consultation. Just send them pictures of your house and they send back custom recommendations from a professional for what will work with your color scheme, furniture, and specific rooms. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. And this is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, if you make a mistake, Blinds.com will remake your blinds for free. They've really made it easy for you, so there's no excuse to leave up those mangled blinds. And for a limited time, our listeners get $20 off at Blinds.com when you use promo code SUBBEACON. That's Blinds.com, promo code SUBBEACON for $20 off. Faux-wood blinds, cellular shades, roller shades, and more. Blinds.com, promo code SUBBEACON. Rules and restrictions apply. Corrections, additions, anything? In a couple weeks, I have a special treat for you, a special taste of the week of something. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's coming in. You're going to love
special
it.
Special mayonnaise?
You'll love it. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. That is all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at Victorina Mattis, at Sunny Bunch. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Just type in SubBeacon on a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Hey, before we get into outtakes,
yeah,
Victorino,
sure. JVL.
So I just want to instant correction on what we just said. So Saturday Night Dead, it was it ran for 6 years on NBC, the NBC station in Philadelphia.
Whoa, it's just a channel.
It ran
3
at the time. It was KYW, which I think was Channel 3. It ran after Saturday Night Live, so it was an ultra late night show. It was originally
no competition then.
And this is great. So it was hosted by Stella, the man eater from Maniunk. this is from the Wikipedia page. According to her biography, Stella was, quote, born in North Libido, New Jersey, a small village outside of Atlantic City. She is the only child of traveling hecklers. Her parents dropped her in a plastic basket at Fifth and Shunk in front of Guido's Hair Weaving and Plumbing Supplies.
You know what?
The most Philly thing ever. That's all.
I'm sure it's fine.